Welcome to the Men of 8 Gang podcast for Saturday, December 12th, 2009. This is Steve Borsch, and on with me is Tim Elliott.
Good morning.
Graham Thickens.
Hello there.
And Phil Wilson.
Good morning. And Steve, was that music from your garage band?
That was rock and roll for you, Phil, because you made a special request last time.
Dude, we're going to have to get you the true definition of rock and roll, because...
Hey, I'm limited to the PodSafe music library.
That is all fine and well, but...
All right.
I'm still waiting for surf for surf music.
There you go.
Okay. Instrumental surf.
Yeah. Let's get a little Dick Dale for him, huh?
There you go. Yep.
Yeah.
And we got a local band, too, that I would recommend.
Who's that?
Oh, it's called Big Surf Band. There's a huge surf music scene in the Twin Cities.
Really?
There are multiple bands, and they hook up with the rockabilly community. And sometimes they have rockabilly and surf music on a given night at one of the local bars. They play at the Hex Bar a lot. And we'll have to see if we could get some of their music.
Yeah.
Hey, Graham, have you ever heard of the band Los Straight Jackets?
Yes, I have.
They're a great surf band. They're really
good.
And they wear the Mexican wrestling masks on stage. It's quite the surreal experience.
Yeah. Surf music has a bigger following than you think. Even here in Minnesota, it's crazy.
Made possible by the Fender Jaguar, right?
Let's do that. I think that'd be a lot of fun.
Yeah.
So, you know what? I was going to start with something else, but let's instead start with a little recap of Minibar. I know it's a little bit late, but Phil, why don't you...
A little bit late. Wow.
Yeah. All right.
Seems like an eon ago.
We've been busy. We've all been busy. I know.
But we did take a little bit of a break for a couple of weeks there because of the holidays and because of schedules. So we apologize for that. But Minibar, as always, a good crowd at Minibar. It was held over at Best Buy. And, Graham and I had a chance to do a little bit of a podcast from there, from the booth at the cafeteria. What's the name of that place?
Jeannie's place or something like that.
I'm sorry if I forgot, but we had a good time and a lot of information, a lot of different great bust out groups. We did a little sort of brutal beta of the Clove app there, just to sort of see how it went as far as getting feedback directly. So that was fun. And Graham, you had a lot of discussions I could see going on with a lot of some of the sponsors and some of the VCs in town, right?
Yeah, I basically spent most of the time schmoozing. I really didn't get a chance to hear many of the presentations. I sat in on the journalism one early on, but I found the large room, the large cafeteria. It was hard to hear unless you were right down in front, you know, with
exactly.
The really high ceilings in there. Plus,
exactly.
With my cold and everything, my hearing was half shot anyway. So I spent most of the time talking with people in between sessions and during sessions, and I missed a lot of good ones. I did catch the one that, what was it called, Phil? Did you sit on the one by the lawyer, Kevin Spring, about bootstrapping startups, I think?
Oh, yeah, we did a little bit of that. That was an interesting session. It was very basic in information, but it was well attended. I think that was probably one of the most well attended sessions and the easiest to hear because it was in the theater there.
Theater, yeah, that's a great room with, that was a good venue, that particular room. And I don't think the talk went over all that well, particularly when he lambasted marketing as being like a bad thing and ended up getting attacked by several in the audience, and me included, when I could get a word in edgewise. But lawyers teaching us about marketing is not something I took out part of my valuable day to hear. But anyway.
I had a couple of conversations throughout the day with a couple of folks that we talked their comments to me, and I've thought about this on occasion as well, and get ready for the segue, Steve, because I know you want to segue into this topic as well. But we were talking about collaboration in the Twin Cities and that we get together a lot to talk about collaborating, but we rarely collaborate. So that was one of those concepts that sort of struck me, because yes, we do get together, things like social media breakfast and mini bar, mini demo, and that sort of stuff. And we talk about collaborating as an industry here in the Twin Cities, and rarely do we go any farther than just talking about that. At least that was the impression from some of the folks that I spoke
yes.
with.
Yes. And the other thing I heard very loud and clear was that there's all these different groups and activities and people trying to start new things, you know, and it's very diffused. There's so many things and groups and free meetings you can go to and new stuff coming on that, you know, but it's like still there's something missing, you know. And in fact, I intended to put that question to one of our podcast guests that we didn't succeed in getting to participate. But yeah, there's I hear what you're saying, Phil, and I agree. It's a problem.
There are a lot of people. If I can just interject, there are a lot of people.
Sure.
When you really stand back and look at, you know, the Association for Business Communicators and the Social Media Breakfast and on and on and on. You start to look at all the different groups, and there's a lot of leaders and a lot of things that have a lot of overlap, and pulling them together is probably the biggest challenge.
Well, and I'm speaking from the standpoint of the startup community, and I specifically heard it voiced that there is no leader that has seized the role and stood up and taken the, you know, more from the startup community realm, I think. And I think we're definitely, when this guy says that, and I would agree with him, we're pointing as much to the VC community as anything. It's just a lack of real funded innovation in this town that is just the big, you know, sore spot out there, you know, the elephant in the room, if you will. And you know, I don't know that there's an answer to that. You know, we're never going to be a Silicon Valley. But there are many people that, you know, that think we have so much going and that we're so wonderful and, you know, and we don't get the recognition we deserve and blah, 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 you know, but, yeah. but there is a void out there. And no one's stepping up.
I think one of the comments that I heard from one of the people that I was talking to about it was, and again, I've never been to the Valley, short of passing through, on completely unrelated topics, but that they really said, you know, there are people that really, truly collaborate and they work together to accomplish goals. And sometimes that means a financial reward for all participants in it. And sometimes means financial rewards for just one or two of the participants, that they truly do collaborate. And now I can't tell you, you know, what that looks like here. Maybe you guys can, but it was a frustration of, okay, we keep talking about doing things together, but we don't do things together.
Well, I think a university plays a huge role and nothing will ever be like Stanford in the Valley. You know, it's a unique situation, but a university is important in all tech centers and ours is still coming on, I think, as far as being the cooperation between the startup community and particularly, the business community, if you will, but and the university.
That's a great point, Graham.
Yeah, we need more of it. And I think a lot of people know that, but it's a slow, slow process. It's changing. I see things, you know, good things happening, but it's, you know, we're still not there.
Well, you know, the other part is there, one of the reasons we started Minovate was to have a bridge between events, because we, you know, there's mini demo and mini bar and Ben and Luke set up this, you know, I mean, really wonderful venues, but there was no way to do anything in between. And I would argue that it's still that way, that there really isn't a single place for people to come together virtually, whether that's Social Media Breakfast has done a nice job with their Ning site.
Monthly meetings,
right.
Which is good.
Yeah. Right, because it keeps it top of mind.
Yep. Yeah, let's face it, it's been 18 months since the previous minibar. It took them 18 months to get another one going. And you know, yeah, it's tough finding a venue, blah, 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 you know, and then the mini demos aren't held every quarter. That's the goal, but they aren't even that close together in many cases. So,
but you know, I would argue that what's going on with all these different groups is because of the state of flux that the internet is in. I mean, as we reset the economy and as things roll over and you know, there isn't anything that's set in stone. And what I remember, you guys probably don't, but I was with Pioneer New Media when LaserDisc was geared for interactive and CD-ROM came out and all of that. All the tests were being done with cable, interactive cable. And there were very few digital targets. I mean, CD-ROM ended up being the digital target. I don't know if you remember, Time Magazine had multimedia on their cover on one issue. Yep. And that was the buzzword du jour. And then all of a sudden, when the internet hit, I was part of this group called the International Interactive Communication Society. And we had a chapter here in the Twin Cities, and there were about 100 and some people in the chapter. There were 3,500 people in this organization. Really robust, and literally within 18 months it was gone because the group itself didn't embrace the internet. They hung on to, you know, LaserDisc and CD-ROM and all of that, and the shift was pretty quick. Now today we have all these different targets. So there's Web 2.0, there's Enterprise 2.0, there's social media, there's various web app, cloud computing, there's mashups, there's all of, you know, there's rich internet applications, there's all these different places, and there's really nothing that's sort of grabbed a hold of the target. Netbooks are part of that, and maybe this would be a good segue into tablets, because I know, Tim, you've got some interesting take on that. I see tablets as being a huge opportunity, especially when you think about the fact that there are 55,000 people in printing and publishing in the state of Minnesota, and Waseca has, you know, I think it's called Brown Publishing or something down there that, you know, does all the magazines, Business Week and Time and so on. I'm sure they're hurting. But with all the creatives and all the ad agencies and everything else, I mean, I sort of see this whole new realm of devices, tablet type devices, and long-term evolution, faster mobile wireless networks as being potentially the biggest opportunity out there that maybe this state's ever seen. Or am I being too happy, asked Tim?
Well, I don't know. I think that a lot of people are thinking that tablets are going to be the next thing, that Apple's going to, you know, validate it just like they've done with cell phones and so forth. And I see it more as an evolution. And I do think that there will be some interesting tablets, but I don't think that we're going to see one from Apple. And I don't think that the one that wins is going to be anything more than kind of a netbook without a keyboard on it.
So kind of like a large iPod Touch?
Yeah, no, if Apple does anything that's tablet oriented, I think it's going to be in one of two ways. Either they're going to make the MacBook into a tablet and with full on Mac OS 10, or they're just going to scale the iPod Touch just a little bit so it's a better book reader, and then get into the ebook market and maybe other content like magazine kind of content like Steve was talking about. I just don't see a 10-inch Apple tablet because they would have to come up with yet another operating system, and I don't think they want to have another fork of OS 10.
Right.
You know, yep. because all the gestures, everything. I just picked up an iPod Touch, so now I'm, you know, part of this app ecosystem thing.
And cool. And scary, isn't it?
and all of the thing that occurs to me is that the way that you interact with it, either iPhone or iPod Touch, makes sense for a device that big. It would not make sense for something that's 10 inches large.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. So it's got to be a handheld kind of a thing.
Yep. Yeah. They'd have to come up with something radically different. And I would think that it's natural for Apple to come up with a touchscreen interface for their computers just like you see for Windows, and you know, integrate that into the iMac and the MacBook. So I would look to see their tablet as more of an evolutionary thing of the MacBook than anything else.
Do you think the touchscreen Mac OS will come in 2010?
Yeah, no, I would think that would make more sense to me, because it's more extensible to their line.
Yes.
And then something brand new where they have to get developers behind it and all that stuff, which I just don't see them doing. It just does not make sense to me. So either a slightly larger, maybe more Kindle-ish form size of a iPod Touch, maybe with 3G built into it, just like you have with the Kindle, so you can buy content. Maybe not. Maybe just Wi-Fi. And then, you know, just building in touch into Mac OS, and then coming up with a MacBook style tablet, maybe even, like what you see on the PC side with one of those things that twists around, so it goes over the keyboard, so you can convert it into a tablet and then convert it back into a notebook when you need the keyboard.
See, that's what I think. That's what I think will end up happening, is that it'll be if you don't have it either using a small Bluetooth keyboard and mouse, if you don't have it interacting with a keyboard and mouse, that the mode is going to change to a pure touch interface. And then if you put it in portrait or landscape mode on a little stand and have a keyboard and mouse, that it'll act like a computer. But you know, as somebody who, since 2002, my wife does that trends in home furnishings stuff. We've been producing PDF ebooks, full screen, navigation, the whole thing with PDF ebooks, and we do 7 of them a year now for the home furnishings industry. And I have been waiting and looking for the next delivery container. Not that PDF isn't great, but PDF has limitations, and it has limitations, especially based on screen size. So you've got to make sure your fonts are huge and you got plenty of leading in between the particular sentences and so forth, so it's easy to read on the screen. And when I've seen some of the demos, like Condé Nast's demo with Wired, and there's one here for Sports Illustrated, and I'll put a link to that in the show notes. When you look at that, and you look at the interactivity, and you look at the fact that it'll play video, and it'll do all the wonderful things that you want it to do. It'll be a living, breathing, dynamic type of magazine or publication. I get extraordinarily excited. Of course, then you got to wait till critical mass hits before you can really start to publish to that target. But, for example, I've been stunned that Adobe hasn't done more with Air to make that a better runtime container, make it easier to develop for. Because today it's still way too hard, and so we haven't bothered. But I think the tablet, I don't know, I'm using Stanza on my iPhone, and I think, oh my God, if this was a 10-inch or even an 8-inch or whatever size tablet, this would be a great experience, except for battery life.
Now explain what Stanza is.
Stanza is an application. It's an ebook reading application, and you can flip through the pages of it. You can buy books and so on. And in fact, it was so interesting, and I saw the potential for it and was thinking, man, if this was a bigger screen, how awesome this would be. And then Amazon bought them, I'm sure, as a hedge.
Defensive.
Sure.
To keep them away from others. Well, the question is, will Stanza and other things like it, and the demos you were talking about, will they work on a screen of 5 inches or whatever a large iPod Touch would be? Maybe it wouldn't even be 5 inches, but is that Kindle size screen going to be something that will work with these kinds of formats?
Yeah, absolutely. I think I'm using the Barnes & Noble e-reader so I can actually buy books and have them down on my iPod Touch. And it works the same way. You flip the pages just like you'd flip a book page, and it goes to the next page. And it would scale to something slightly larger. It just wouldn't scale to something that's 2 or 3 times larger.
Right.
And I agree. It's okay for maybe 10 or 15 minutes. But after that, if I wanted to read for an hour or two, I can't imagine reading it on this screen. So it needs to be slightly larger to be, you know, it needs to be more like a paper book size, which is what the Kindle is, more than the, you know, the pocketable size that, that an iPod Touch or an iPhone is.
Well, from everything I'm reading, this new larger iPod Touch is definitely gonna compete with Kindle. I mean, Apple, people are saying, analysts and others are saying that Apple is going to be in that ebook reader category with this device, or with one or more. You know, I don't know how many devices they're gonna come out with, but I know it isn't June. Well, January and June, aren't those sort of the months when they tend to introduce stuff, Steve? I don't know if we're going to see one device or two devices, but something is going to be a competitor and is going to eat a lot of Kindle's lunch, I'm convinced.
Well, you know, the IT analyst firm, IDC, they are, you have to be a subscriber to get the actual report. I'm sure you can buy it for several thousand dollars, but they just released a report predicting an IT recovery and transformation in 2010. And one of the things that they talk about with respect to tablets is the emergence of enterprise-grade cloud services that'll be a unifying theme in this area, and that the tablet is core to that. They also talk about the number of iPhone apps tripling to 300,000 and Android apps surging by a factor of five or more. Yeah, so I can just see scrolling through the hot apps, try to get through. Tonight, I think I'll look at 100,000 of these apps. God. I mean, my God. But
there's too many apps.
And there's too many apps.
There's so many of them that are pointless.
Yeah.
Well, and it just speaks to the difficulty of independent developers from getting any visibility in the marketplace. I mean, it's turned into a big game, and only the largest with the big marketing budgets are going to cut through all that, you know? So I think we're going to see a lot of consolidation of iPhone app development firms and Android app developers for that matter.
There's not that many of those Android app developers out there, at least in the, in the Twin Cities. There's some, but there's not a lot. And
well, I think the successful iPhone app development firms like DoApp have moved into it quite well and will continue to do so. But the demand needs to be there, and that's still coming. And it's being helped a lot by Droid and other phones coming on. This another one is this Aris, E-R-I-S. Is that what it's called? Another phone that... Android phone that might be worth a look.
Oh, I haven't heard about that one.
Yeah, it's the same as the HTC Hero. So it's now coming to Verizon as the Droid Aris.
Yeah,
and it's built by HTC. It looks like a really nice set.
Yeah.
Yeah, I did that review of the Droid, you know, through our buddy Al Marughi, who's doing some work for Verizon apparently, and he hinted that he would be getting me an Aris. But are they even available yet to the public, or is it still?
No, yeah, they're selling them now.
Okay, they are selling them. Okay, it's out there. All right.
Well, the one thing, last thing I want to say about this IDC report is that they're expecting more than 1 billion mobile devices accessing the internet by the end of next year.
Wow.
And they're taking into, you know, it's tablets, it's netbooks, it's smartphones. And of course, now with netbooks, you've got the Google Chrome OS, you've got, what's that other one that starts with a J that TechCrunch was talking about yesterday?
Jolly Cloud.
That's also coming out. And so there's going to be... I just think the volume of devices is going to make that an incredible opportunity. And when you look at what Grigsby and his crew did with the Mobile Orchard to try to be centric to the mobile app development space, smart move. I just think that there's just going to be so many possibilities. And then when you add to that stuff like what's happening with Drupal 7 and WordPress 3 and all of the other things that are happening around you know, technology-centric ecosystems, there's going to be a lot of places to make money as a startup in 2010.
Well, yeah, especially in the mobile space.
Yeah, absolutely.
And let's hope that our community can seize on some of that. I think we've got a lot of smart developers out there that have a lot of great ideas, and I just hope that their ideas can get funded and that they can move forward with them, you know?
Yep.
Either that or they're going to leave town and and go elsewhere, you know, and they, maybe some of them should, you know. I mean, it's coming to that for me, you know. They hate to leave Minnesota, but by golly, if they have to go to the Valley to get funded, they can, and they just, maybe they will, you know.
Well, I think one of the biggest challenges are there really isn't a venue for business strategists and decision makers to understand where all of this is going. I mean, if everybody could have seen Mary Meeker's presentation at the Web 2.0 summit and looked at just directionally what the trends are in all of these different areas, including mobile, that strategists would look at that and say, we've got to be there. How do we get there? And figure out how to get there.
Yeah. Do you have a link to that? I'd love to see that. She's an amazing analyst.
Absolutely. Well, I'll put it in the show notes.
Yeah, that'd be cool. Was that at the Web 2.0 Summit in San Francisco?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think I read that she was on stage there. Yep.
Yep. Yeah, I'll put it up. So when I look at just the volume of people that are hot on the social media breakfast and the fact that, you know, now you need to have a baseball bat to beat people off to get a ticket to the event. what does it mean? I mean, is it because some people will say, well, yeah, you know, half the people there are just looking for jobs. I would argue that that's not the case. That
no, it's three quarters.
Oh man,
I have some very definite ideas about that. Can I speak my piece here?
Yeah. Oh God, yes.
I think it's getting too unmanageable. I think it's gone beyond ridiculous. And I think a lot of people who want to be there and need to be there can't even be there now. And I'm not going to name a person, but one of our most renowned internet entrepreneurs, who's probably been more successful as a single entrepreneur that I'm aware of since the internet happened, it can't even get a ticket to go to the thing. And wow. I took it upon myself to raise my hand with the powers that be of, you know, Rick and Michael, I guess, run the show at SMB and say, hey, we got to do something. This guy should be there. He wants to be there. He can't get a ticket. What, you know, something, you know, I mean, this shouldn't be a lottery kind of a thing for everybody that just wants a free breakfast, you know, something. And I'll fast forward. The solution is start charging. Other SMB groups have done it for a long time.
Yeah.
They don't all rely just on free bacon sponsors. They charge $5. They charge $10. That'll cut down a lot of the extraneous, Everything can't be free, you know. Sometimes you got to charge for these things, you know.
Well, yeah. Here's the deal. I believe Michael and Don, or Michael and Rick, can do anything they want with social media breakfast. I know we can sit here and we can talk and complain about how sometimes we get a ticket and sometimes we don't get a ticket. The fact of the matter is, it's their event. They can run it any way they want. If somebody wants to start another group, knock yourselves out. That's all I can say. You know, I know we sit here and we complain about it, but I got to stand up for these guys. They're providing a free service. And Graham, it ain't about the breakfast. Believe me, it ain't about the breakfast. The best we do is donuts and bagels and maybe a little bacon now and again. And the bacon is more of a gag than a breakfast.
Right.
So, I think that the way they want to run it is completely up to them. If they want to run an open meeting, run an open meeting. Anybody that can show up, show up. And they're only limited by the size of the venues they can get. And the fact is that if you're looking for a long-term discussion and intimate group setting, social media breakfast ain't the place anymore. If you want to look for things like that, put together coffee stuff. That's okay.
Right.
But I still think social media breakfast really provides a lot of great positive things. It's a great gathering spot. It is a chance to meet people at all levels of the social media spectrum, those that are professionals and those that are brand new and just meeting. So,
Phil,
clearly they've got some issues.
So. Phil, Would you stop holding back?
Sorry.
Yeah.
Well, look, I mean, I've done my fair share of bitching about not being able to get a ticket too.
Yeah,
so
yeah,
don't get me wrong. I would love to be at every single one of them, but every once in a while, you know, I guess I have to take the back seat, and that's okay. As long as somebody is going to show up. My biggest problem is not that they sell out of tickets quickly. It's the fact that they don't have people that show up, you know, and I can say, you know, we'll take this chance to use this bully pulpit right now and say, look, if you're going to sign up for social media breakfast, show up. Don't just sign up.
Well, there's a solution to that, too, that another organization has taken on, and that's Paul DeBettings with his Minnesota Recruiters on conferences. Anyone who doesn't show, because he sells out tickets to those like right away, too, and he's now getting 300-400 people coming to those. I think he does them at least quarterly or maybe every other month. And the solution is whoever reserves a ticket and doesn't show up, they don't get to come to the next one. So, you know, that's one technique
that could be used.
Yeah, because if they, you know, if they take up a place and don't show, then they're hurting everybody else. But the point I was making is when they get to be 400 people or so, I mean, it gets to be a point of no return where you can't even find venues anymore, you know. In fact, where's this next one going to be and how many people are they going to have at that? Isn't that kind of a small venue where they're having?
Yeah, they'll maybe be, I would bet that maybe 150 people. And get into it. It's at open book.
Look, I mean, Kim one Gerritsen of the other guys, one of the biggest other bitches, and again, I'm not holding back, sorry. The other bitch was, it's gotten too big and it's not intimate enough for the discussion. Guys, you can't have it both ways. You gotta be able to say, okay, look, it's a tougher ticket to get. Yes, it's a tougher ticket, but look, God, it's free, guys. And it does get people in touch with very passionate people about the space. Even if it's passionate for just one visit, they want to be there. They want to see what's going on in the space. And I think that's great. And I think that moving into a smaller venue, yeah, I think maybe it is the next step towards making it a pay ticket. But I think it's great that they're trying to downsize it to make it smaller, because I'd much rather have you walk away from spending 2 hours on a Friday morning with something that I felt like I participated in, didn't just watch.
Yeah. Right, yeah. Right.
Okay, there me. I'm going on a rant. Sorry.
All right. Well, why do we think that social media breakfast has developed so much traction in the last year, where you've got, you know, mini bar, mini demo, which seems to be around the same amount of people? You can get tickets to it if you're tuned into it. They don't sell out in, you know, an hour or whatever.
Well, I think the
very nature of it being social.
Well, and it's more frequent, and it's the mob mentality. You know, I mean, it's like everybody hears about it, then everybody wants to go to it. And, oh, there's another one coming up, and, oh, it's just 2 weeks now from when they announce it. And so everybody, you know, it's just gotten more buzz because it's they've done a good job of promoting it. And let's remember that this is just part of a national movement. We happen to be, I guess, the biggest. And the one group that's had more meetings consecutively than any other city, but you know, it's gotten a lot of buzz.
And well, it's simple. It's also very simple. It's very accessible. Right. Okay, it's accessible to everybody. Mini bar and mini demo. You can get yourself lost in, and I mean this in the best possible way, the geekiness of it. It's very high level stuff. It's very program based. It's very developer based. And face it, there's a limited amount of people that really want to get into that. We happen to like, I mean, I'm not necessarily trained any more than anybody else on the street, but I kind of dig the geekiness. I kind of enjoy hearing what's going on, even though sometimes I'm not understanding what's going on. But social media breakfast is incredibly accessible. They're good people to hang out with. I can tell you that I have met some of the best human beings through social media breakfast. And I don't necessarily know if I can say that about mini bar or mini demo.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, each group has over 1,000 people on their list. I mean, they're equal size groups, and there's a fair amount of overlap. You know, there's probably an overlap of 40-50%, perhaps, maybe not quite that much, but they're both very large databases, if you will.
Do you really think there's that much overlap? I don't see that much overlap.
Oh, yeah.
When I went to, you know, Mini Bar, No, I mean, I didn't see a lot.
Well, certainly not the marketing and PR people that Social Media Breakfast attracts. But a lot of those developers are in both groups. Yeah, mm-hmm. Maybe it's not 40%, but maybe 30% overlap. Certainly of people that have attended at least, you know, say two SMBs, I think it would be at least a 30% overlap. But you know, let's face it, developers, which is most of the Minibar mini demo group, aren't all that interested in many of the SMB meetings because they're not technically oriented. They're marketing oriented, or they're, you know, nonprofit, social media oriented, or some such thing, and they're not specifically about technical things. Yep. In fact, very few of them are. I mean, Social Media Breakfast rarely gets into the real geekiness, you know. Yep.
Well, speaking of geekiness, and this is something that I'm always really pleased with, what a great effort this is the Overnight Website Challenge. And Tim Elliott, you are leading a team this year at this event. So tell us about
cool.
Who's on your team, and what's your, do you have a nonprofit already?
No. The way that this works is that we're in the process of putting together both the teams on both sides. So the nonprofits put together through an application process, and the teams form. And presumably there'll be more than 12 teams that will form. Right now, as I look at it, there are six. And there's 12 that are chosen sometime early next year. And then those 12 go with 12 nonprofits. And I guess the fun of it is that no one knows who they're going to be matched up with. And I guess the process is somewhat mystical, where the morning of the event, you actually get paired up. And yep. So you go in, and then you work 24 hours and get a website together, or get a plan together, is what it sounds like from people that I've talked to that have participated. But we're gonna actually try to get the website done. It came out of the WordPress users group listserv, and there was enough interest that I got 10 people, including Phil here, to join the team.
Fun.
Yeah. Hey, unlike you, Steve, who said you don't think you can stay up that late. Now, come on.
Me neither.
I can stay up that late. It's just that I pay the price for like 3 days when I pull an all-nighter. So,
yep.
Plus,
yeah,
I'll show up
in the morning and watch it get started. But
I noticed that, Graham. I noticed you show up in the morning when the donuts and breakfast.
Yeah, exactly. That's what
it's a breakfast thing for you. That's all.
It was kind of fun. Is it going to be over on the St. Paul campus, the U of M St. Paul campus again?
Yes.
Have they announced yet?
Yeah, it will be there. It's at the overnightwebsitechallenge.com site, so I'm sure Steve will put it in the show notes.
Yep,
that's a great venue, and it's just a sight to behold to see all these groups come together in this one big room. But it does get a little ripe, they say, after about 20 hours in there. First of all, the heat from all the machines, you know. But I went over last year and did some interviews, audio interviews. I think, did we post them on Minovate, or did I do them on my own blog, or both?
I think
anyway,
both.
Yeah, it's quite an event that they put on that Sierra Bravo funds and promotes, and they do a great job with that.
Yeah, it's going to be March 20th to 21st. So as we get further, and hopefully our team will be chosen as one of the 10 teams that gets into it, we should know, looks like the 18th of January. That's when we'll know if we're in or not.
Great.
Now, are you going to use a theme? Are you going to like take thesis and
yeah, I think what we'll do is use a framework. So one of the things that I learned from someone that was in last year is you really need to kind of get things buttoned up where, you know, roles and responsibilities are nailed down pretty closely. So I'm going to, you know, work with the team from January through February to, you know, kind of come up with a standard installation with all the plugins and the theme frameworks that we think we're going to need, and really kind of have thought all that stuff out. So we can, you know, install WordPress and start dividing the responsibilities on who's going to do what and kind of get things done very rapidly. And, yep. and I think we can in 24 hours come up with a reasonably good site that would be ready for launch.
Well, I know they did some amazing ones last year. Did anybody use WordPress in the 10 groups last year? I suspect they must have, didn't they? Yes,
there was at least one group that I know of.
Okay.
And one of them was that half the team started out coding in Joomla and the other half decided soon after that it would be better to go in WordPress. And so it kind of got a little bit divided from that perspective.
You don't remember which nonprofit site they built, do you?
No. Okay. But one of the issues is that not all the sites that were built in last year's challenge actually made it to the final. And many of them, from what I heard, weren't anywhere close to being done by the end of the 24 hours.
Really? See, I never heard that. So, and you're also saying that some of them never really went live. The nonprofits never were able to take them live?
Hard to tell at this point.
Some of them are live, some of them aren't.
Huh.
So, you know, I'm not sure what happened there. I think what happens is that these groups come together, and if they're not completely done, and if the nonprofit's not ready to actually deploy the site, the whole thing sort of loses momentum after everyone's done with the event.
Well, and I can say from being there last year, excuse the phone ringing in the background, that some of these nonprofits are pretty early on and pretty loosey-goosey sort of newer organizations. They all aren't, you know, established and well-funded either. You know, mm-hmm. they select them based on number of considerations, you know, cause related kind of thing. So it'll be interesting to see what list of nonprofits they choose this year, which they may not announce until well into February or something, Tim?
February 1st is what the timeline shows right now. And there's six nonprofits right now that have nominated themselves. Now this will be,
oh, there'll be tons more than that.
There will be, and they're going to get it down to 12, I think.
Okay. Yeah, last year they had I don't know how many applied, but it seems like 30, 40, 50 of them applied, and they had to choose 10. So I expect that as it gets closer, they're going to have a ton of applicants for that.
Yeah, I mean, they just opened the application process like a week ago, so... You know, I'm sure that we're going to see a lot more teams form and a lot of people, you know, coming forward here in the early January timeframe. So,
yep. And it's
a great cause. And I think that, you know, it'll be fun doing, and we'll certainly, you know, half of us will be involved directly and the other half will be, covering it from a journalistic standpoint. So I think we'll have a good podcast to talk about that week.
Oh, that'll be great.
You bet.
That'll be great.
What it's like to do this from the inside and from the outside.
Well, what a worthwhile cause too. That's
it's a great event. My partner at Local Tone, Justin, has been doing it for 2 or 3 years, and he always loves it. He's beat at the end of the event, but he says it's a great event. So yeah. I'm looking forward to it. Hopefully I think I'm in charge of getting him coffee. That's going to be my job.
Oh, that's great. Well, hey, speaking of innovative things.
And we were, because
couple of
we
things.
Are Innovate.
That's right. Don Ball, his new collaboration concept. For the space has rolled out. He's got pictures up. On his Posterous blog. I'll put links in the show notes.
Nice looking space. He's got
a very nice
there.
Looking space. Yeah, and it's it's relatively inexpensive. He's got pricing up. I'll put that in the show notes as well.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see if this actually helps the collaboration concept that we were talking about at the top of the show, because I think that's, you know, this allows that direct connection now. So and at a fairly reasonable price.
Well, and down in the comments under his plans and pricing for the new collaborative space in St. Paul, Thomas Knoll had said, "I can't highly recommend enough that you make drop-ins free. What's the actual cost to you to have people drop in, and how they ever become comfortable enough to with the space to want to join?" And And Don said, thanks for pointing out the need for free drop-in trials. We'll have to add that in. And what I realized is, oh my God, it's like the freemium model. You know, you get your free trial and so he put that in for casual co-working. First time day pass is free. So you can
A one day pass. So
you get one day
hang
pass
around and keep getting it for free. Yeah.
Right.
But this should cut down on the lines at Caribou significantly.
There you go. I think it's a great concept.
And Starbucks.
And
Dunn Brothers, you know.
What I'm interested in is the fact that he's referenced the fact that they're going to be using some theatrical techniques to divide the space up. And so it'll be very interesting to see how this space actually comes together.
Yeah. Yeah. And how they protect privacy while still making it. You know, people can mill about and interact with one another. You know what's interesting? Because it really hasn't hit here yet, but I'm sure you guys have read the articles about what's happening in the Bay Area with coffee shops that are actually putting covers on the electrical outlets so people can't, you know, because then they got a finite amount of battery life, so you can only spend so much time sitting there. And that Dunn Brothers over by Eden Prairie Library, where you and I have seen each other, Graham and Phil and I.
Oh, yeah.
Well, no, all three of us, we've all met there together. But there's a conference table in the back behind that partition. And and I was in there one day actually meeting with Steve Kickert from one place. And there was a guy there that had his laptop out and all of his expense receipts laid out all over the table. The guy's sitting there doing his expenses and he's up on his phone making calls and stuff.
And he's taking up six spots.
He's taking up six spots. And
every time I go in there, Steve, I see the same darn people. And I only go in there once every 3 months, maybe.
Right.
And it's the same darn people in there every day.
Yeah.
Well, here's what you do.
That place is their office.
Here's what you do. You just park outside.
yeah, exactly.
Right? You get your drink and you come back out and you sit outside in your car.
Yep.
Good plan.
Suck up the Wi-Fi.
Good plan.
Exactly. But I've read about what you're talking about in San Francisco. They've got big problems in New York, too, where they have to cut down on people buying one cup of coffee and sitting there all day, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
It's a real problem for these coffee shops.
Yep. Well, that's why, you know, Starbucks went with that, that 1 hour. You get an hour free Wi-Fi and that's it. Shuts off. You know,
where is that?
They do that.
I've never been to a Starbucks that even offered free Wi-Fi.
I don't know. I don't know what they rolled.
It must be just rolling out in those expensive neighborhoods like yours.
Yeah, right.
Well, if you use AT&T, you get free Wi-Fi at Starbucks.
Well, yeah, but you got to use AT&T.
Only on your iPhone.
AT&T?
Not on your laptop, only on your iPhone. So you can get Wi-Fi, but only through your iPhone. That's the only
way. Oh, really?
Yeah, you can't.
That sucks.
Yeah, it does. Yeah.
That's why I go to Dunn Brothers. They don't give me any crap. And
don't worry about it. They've even got computers there.
It's all free refill, so I can sit there all day and get free refills on my coffee.
What the heck?
And they're nice guys.
They love people like you.
That's right.
They do give me the stink eye occasionally.
No kidding. Yeah. Dude, move along. I've made $2.50 on you today.
Get the hell out of here.
I'll pick up the muffin here or the...
Yep.
Or the apple fritter there or whatever.
You know, the guys at Dunn Brothers are thinking, muffin, he bought a muffin, I can retire. Honey, we're going to Roosevelt.
I've often thought, how do they make any money? But, you know,
I'm
just glad they're there and their free Wi-Fi works fine.
I think it's they mark up the coffee. We play off the increase the price thing that we talked about for SMB. It's now $10 for a cup of coffee.
Yeah, no kidding.
It's a bottomless cup, but it's $10.
Unfortunately, McDonald's was driving the prices in the other direction, and Starbucks was really sucking air there for a while and had to drop their prices to match McDonald's. And so, unfortunately, can't increase.
Starbucks wandered off theme. That's all they did. They just wandered too far from the core value. So there's a marketing case study right there for you. But
I wonder if Dunn Brothers should sell subscriptions. Really, you know, because it's kind of a work environment kind of a thing.
It absolutely is.
And they could have like a little a conference room in the back that you can, upgrade to. I mean, that could be a business opportunity for them.
Well, they actually do have one out in the Excelsior Dunn Brothers. They have a conference room with French doors you can shut. And you can just request it in advance and sign up for it. And then you get it for whatever length of time. No, but it's really nice.
Sorry, my dog is tangled up with my headphone cord. This is sorry about that.
That reminds me.
Individual franchisees in Dunn Brothers can do whatever they want to do, and some of them, I'm sure, are doing innovative kinds of things like that, and could charge subscriptions if they wanted to.
Well, I don't know if you guys, and I've always thought the uptake. The uptake.org was an innovative initiative for citizen journalism.
Right.
And Chuck Olson, Chuckumentary on Twitter, is over in Copenhagen right now, and he was doing some live streaming this morning from Quick, and I was watching that. And even though, they've been only up on the fringe and marginally accepted as journalists, even though that seems to be getting better, do you guys ever go there? I mean, do you ever pay any attention to it? Are you
to Copenhagen?
No, to the uptake.
Oh,
yeah, occasionally, especially during the election. When there was a lot of topical stuff. I drop in there maybe once every couple of weeks just to see what's going on. I'm always interested to see if they can keep the momentum going until the next election cycle.
Right.
And it looks like they have. I talked to Chuck at one of the social media breakfasts here in the last couple months, and he was saying they were able to raise enough money to keep it sort of going for a while. So, and he mentioned he was going to take this trip to Copenhagen. So,
yeah.
So he's picking up things here and there, and I'm sure the other members of that team are continuing to raise money. And, I think that they will get grants, particularly around when the next election cycle starts. So.
Right. Well,
is there a for-profit model, or is it a nonprofit 501c3, or what is his model?
I think it's not for profit.
I think
it
so
is
too.
Nonprofit, yeah.
You
got grant, but it really was the impetus was the grant money to do the coverage of the election. So
right, yeah,
that was what really drove it, and I think the passion of the people involved now are keeping it alive. So.
Right. Well, lastly, to end, I don't know if you guys are golf fanatics at all, but the 91st annual PGA Championship is this August at Hazeltine, and I'm wondering if you think Tiger's going to make it.
That's a very good question. Will he be back by then?
Yeah,
I got to think he will be. But boy, there's a lot of laying low that's going to be taking place between now and then. It looks like I even heard that he may be moving to Sweden to kind of escape the United States and ostensibly to go back to his wife's home country and try to rebuild back there.
Yeah. Well, the police were. We're interviewing her.
Here it comes.
And they asked her how many times she hit him with a golf club, and she says, "I can't remember. Just put me down for a five." And then, but actually,
where's the rim shot?
we need sound effects.
All right.
There, you can also do he claimed that the accident was caused by a problem with his Escalade, and it's just like a golfer to blame the caddy.
Yeah. That's good. Well, he never lied to his wife though when he said, "Honey, I'm going to go out to play around."
I know. Is that comic twit or what?
These have all been on comic twit, brother.
There is literally there's a TigerWoodsJokes.com site.
Just go to comic twit. It's a much better site.
Well, I got all my college buddies, that I'm on this list. And the stuff that's going around is absolutely unbelievable.
The
photos that have been doctored.
The difference between Tiger Woods and Santa Claus, right?
What?
Santa stops at three hoes.
Oh, man.
Oh,
all
listen
right.
to you guys.
Well, listen, with that, how about if we sign off? Go out and enjoy this sunny day and have a good one.
Yeah, you bet.
You too, guys.
All right.
Sounds good.
Stay
Take
warm.
Care, gentlemen.